Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk with John Gillick, financial advisor, certified financial planner, and we're going to follow the general theme of insurance. Initially life insurance, but really initially we'll talk about why do I need this stuff and how do I understand it? Good morning, John.
Good morning, Bob.
And another John, John Elliott, guest coach, retired Fed, retired seminar presenter, but still knows his stuff. Good morning, John. It's been a while.
Yes, it has. Good morning, Bob. And good morning, John, as well.
Good morning.
All righty. And Andrew is taking good care of us. We'll open the phones up in a little bit. And my name is Bob Lines. I'm an accountant finance type with NITP. And all righty, John. Insurance for a lot of people, whether it's life insurance, health insurance, umbrella insurance, you go, why do I need it? And I don't really understand all the mechanics. So where would one go just to get an idea? What can I read? I understand there's a federal publication that would help one understand the terminologies that are involved, not necessarily the needs. We'll talk about the needs in a minute. That's, I think, another area where you shine is to be able to identify the needs. There's got to be a calculation. Anyway, what's this Fed calculation? Excuse me, publication.
Publication. Well, thank you, Bob. Actually, the Fed publication is the FEGLI, Fegley, as we would like to say it, program booklet. Actually, I downloaded it last night just so I could have it here today, the 50th anniversary edition. So it's a federal publication, FE7621. That's FE7621. And what I like about it is it really is a comprehensive look at the Fegley program. And from basic life to option A, option B, and option C, which is family coverage. And what's nice about the booklet also is it gives you a needs calculator on page 5, which is a great way to figure out how much life insurance you need. And as a life insurance agent, financial planner, one thing I can tell you, Bob, is that with reviewing life insurance over the years, I'll typically ask the question when I'm reviewing life insurance that folks have in place. The question's, you know, how did you determine how much life insurance to get? And unfortunately, the answer I get back a lot of times is, well, that's what the agent suggested we needed. I go, well, did they go through any type of formal needs analysis for you? And the answer is, well, no. So I said, well, you got to shoot from the hip approach to life insurance, and that's not good. So a needs analysis is something that would have to be conducted in every case.
In your travels, if you will, do you find that people, you say $100,000. $100,000 is a lot of money. I'm not so sure $100,000 is a lot of money if somebody was to pay us early or mid-career to take care of one's needs. So are some policies sold by people with a dollar amount, kind of bait and switch, you know, you need $100,000. Yeah, that's a lot of money. I need that. But it's not a lot of money if you do the needs analysis. Am I off base here? I'm not picking on the industry, but on the concept.
No, you're absolutely right. $100,000 now it could be adequate if there's no beneficiaries, no mortgage, not a lot of spousal support needed in a marriage situation. But it's grossly under in a situation where you have a young couple. Say starting out, I met with some folks not too long ago starting out in D.C. and both federal service, but you look at the price of housing, your average row home now is pushing $700,000. I'm sure it's creeping up on $800,000. And for a young couple getting married, no kids, with that high of a mortgage, and you can imagine with federal pay where it is today, if one of them were to pass, especially if there was a child involved or several children down the road, $100,000 just isn't going to cut it. So a needs analysis, taking into account all of the assets, in the case of a marriage, all the marital assets, the employee life or employer-sponsored life insurance, in this case, Fegley. If you're married to someone that's in private industry, you know, what does their employer offer? And, you know, knowing that if there were to be a job change, that life insurance is going to go away. So there's a lot of facets to life insurance and in the exact amount someone needs.
In that Fegley publication you mentioned earlier, is there an interactive tool that can be used on a computer? Because I would imagine the demand for X dollars of life insurance is immaterial whether you buy it from company A, B, C, or D. The premiums are going to be the variable, but the dollar amount is going to be the target.
You're right. The dollar amount is the key. So the amount that you need to cover is clearly the important part. Then it becomes a matter of shopping, and I did a little shopping for myself yesterday. As a life insurance agent, we have interactive tools that will give us an instant quote from all of the vendors that we currently work with. Those tools are available to folks online, and what I really like is that even though on page 5 in the Fegley publication, there's a very simple 7-line calculation to figure out how much life insurance coverage you need, you can actually go online and simply, and I love the Google search, life insurance needs calculator, and you'll probably get 500,000 hits, because every life insurance company out there in some organizations will have a sponsored link for calculators. So if you want to do the click, change the amounts, you can do it very quickly and find all the life insurance calculators you ever wanted right online.
All right, if you were working with somebody new in the workforce and let's say not married, do they need life insurance?
The quick answer to that is no.
Okay.
The quick answer is no, and I love at this point, I told one of the producers here, or one of the folks leaving the studio, that it's not life insurance, it's death insurance. And if you really put it into that perspective, it makes more sense and it helps people get a better grip on how much they actually need. But if you're early federal service, and I see this all the time, you're not married, you're renting, there's no children involved, your assets could be liquidated. What's in your checking account, your TSP, there should be, for the average person even starting out, enough to bury you. When you get into life insurance and you're single, you're now creating a lottery either for a family member or a charitable organization. But when you really sit back from a budgeting standpoint, you look at the amount of money some of these younger folks are paying early in service and they don't have a true life insurance need, they could be putting that money into TSP, they could be putting it into a Roth IRA, the things that would be more effective for them maybe in the near term.
Okay, let's say somebody... as I mentioned earlier on in the career, might have a single for life mentality. But over the years, does it change? Let's say somebody really is single for life. And does the need for life insurance change when they hit 30, 35, 40, 45?
Again, if there's not a designated beneficiary, and I have run into folks say, well, geez, I don't ever intend to be married or I can't have children. But I really would want to take care of my nieces and nephews and educational trust, things like that come into play. So the answer is there may be a need for life insurance, but I was talking to John just before he came in. The real problem with life insurance is that you're dealing with a fixed number of face value. So see, in the example I use in class is that, everybody seems to like a $1 million policy. If I die, okay, it's really not going to do me any good, but it's a $1 million benefit tax-free to my designated beneficiary. Well, if I'm 25 and I get a $1 million policy, we know that inflation trends around 3%, and that means that prices double roughly every 24 to 25 years. So I just rounded up to 25. So the reality is if I'm a 25-year-old with a $1 million policy, that benefit is cut in half when I'm age 50. The purchasing power is now $500,000. When I make it to 75, if I make it to 75, my purchasing power for my beneficiary is now cut in half again. It's worth $250,000 in today's dollars. And, of course, if you make it to that golden age of 100, the purchasing power is now down to $125,000 in terms of today's dollars. And that's the true problem with long-term life insurance, is that benefit will continue to be eroded away because it's fixed with these policies by inflation.
Okay, I'm just going to take the other side of a listener saying, well, it's still $1 million. And I think John's point is, yes, it is. But if we all look back 10, 15, 20 years ago and we were making X and now we're making Y and we're not being able to buy as much with Y as we used to be able to buy with X, then your term purchasing power has got a lot of horsepower.
That's correct. And I actually refer folks to the TSP fact sheets. And if you pull out currently the C-Fund fact sheet, they have a little graph that dates back to 1988 when the C-Fund started. And folks love to look at the $100 turning into, I think it's $932. And but I always say, well, look at the little light-colored line underneath that says inflation. And that line on the current print for the C-Fund fact sheet is $200. So in that period from 1988 to present, inflation is exactly doubled. And to think that's going to change moving forward, it's been consistent over very, very long periods of time. And what really troubles me now is that, you know, if you get into the news, we've had low to no inflation since the housing market crash, the banking crash, and, you know, a lot of us remember, you know, mortgages that were up in the low teens. CDs that were up in the 16, 18 range. I just retired some long-term government bonds that were paying 10%. You know, and those things make you cringe as an investor because, you know, if they were offering 10% 20-year government bonds right now, I'd be even as a financial planner all over them. But I think that you're going to see some near-term inflation, you know, next 5, 6, 7 years, especially with an economy or, you know, a stock market that continues to do well.
Okay, so I think we've got a pretty good handle on the theory of what we need and why we need. How do we know individually? We're not going to have an acid test program to tell us exactly what it is, but how do we get help? I mean, I'm coming to you, John. What do I do? I'm married. I don't have any kids. But when one of us goes, we're living on two incomes. How do I determine what I need, especially in light of what you said? I'm a little younger with more time to go, and inflation is going to take away whatever I get. So how do I build into that? And it's a little bit of a loaded question. Do I buy the longest term insurance? In other words, should it be 10 years? Should it be 20 years? Should it be 30 years? Or do I buy whole life? Now, we could probably spend the rest of the show on that, but let's just go with the basics. Where do I go to just plug in my numbers and have something come out and say, you know, you really ought to think about this?
Well, I think a life insurance needs calculator online is a good first step because when you do go meet with someone, it'll at least give you the background to be able to converse, you know, in the same language, at least the language of life insurance. But I would say any professional, financial planner, financial advisor, someone that has an insurance background should be able to step through that process. But, you know, what I would say to folks is that when you get to the end of the process, it shouldn't be a single quote from a single company. It should be, you know, a quote that is pairing up the best insurance companies out there. Picking the best one, insurance companies are rated by AM Best, A++ being the highest. And when folks say, well, you know, how high should I go? I'd say, well, geez, and I'd like to see A or better because the reality is if we're buying long-term life insurance, let's just say a 30-year term policy, we need to have a very high expectation since it's an obligation of the insurance company that they're going to be there, you know, over that 30-year period. I can't imagine anything worse than being, you know, 25 years into a 30-year term policy passing away and, you know, the insurance company is no longer there to pay the bill. So I think it has to be shopped, but reaching out to a professional in the insurance world is definitely a good first step after you take the time to get a little base education on life insurance. And life insurance needs calculators. There's so many out there with and they give you a great description of what you're trying to accomplish. Most folks are pretty good just stopping with that, but it is a shopping process once you get the determination of amount.
Okay, do any of these programs take into consideration, okay, this is what I need today, but like you say, I factor in inflation, And I don't want to buy what I need today if I've got a 10, 20, 30-year term policy. And we'll get into what the difference in between term, whole life, and universal in a minute. But do any of the calculators build in, okay, this is what you need today, but this is really what you need if you're going to have a longer term policy?
I have to kind of break that question down. I think it's a question of when you do the life insurance needs calculator, you are where you are today with those circumstances. Life insurance is something that should be reviewed minimally every 5 years. I think 5 years is a long enough period. You do want to avoid, reviewing it and then having it suggested to you that what you have is bad and that you need to do something totally different. Now, insurance products do change. There are some inherently bad products out there. But there's a trend that I've seen over the years where folks have been shifted around in policies. And, so if you look back, whole life was the insurance available for quite some time. There was no other permanent policy or type of policy available until Universal Life came out. And when Universal Life came out, there was a nationwide push. Every insurance company that you can imagine that suddenly had the newest thing since sliced bread, and they if you had whole life, they needed you to switch. And clearly that switch, created another opportunity or sales opportunity for insurance companies. And one of the things we face now, and I do want to make sure we get this out there, if folks have universal life, it's a time that you need to review. The problem is universal life is driven by variable interest rates. And we would all agree here that interest rates have been horrible. And so if you have a universal life policy that's 5, 10, 15 years old, the expected rate of return just has not been there. And most folks, when I talk about this and then I circle back and I review policies, they don't realize that this policy they've had for quite some time, they've been paying money into, is not going to outlive them. And in other words, most of those universal life policies, when they did the whole life to universal life conversions, were never re-reviewed to make sure enough premium was going in. So there's a tremendous number of folks out there nationwide that have these universal life policies. They think they're insured. When I meet with folks and that comes up, I say, well, geez, that's one of the first things I want to review, because my guess is if it has not been looked at within the last 3 to 5 years or ever, that policy is going to, as I would term it, blow up sometime when you're in your 70s. And theoretically, that would be the time when you really want that insurance in force. So you have several different issues. Variable universal life. We're kind of dancing around the types now.
Let's do that. Let me make sure I understand now. Term, sure. When I buy it, I buy it for a certain dollar amount. I pay a premium, but the premium has a term. After 5 years, after 10 years, whatever the term is, I don't have it anymore. Now, with universal life...
Let's do whole life first.
Oh, okay. That's the hard one, isn't it? Okay, no. Let's do whole life. Do whole life, then.
The whole life has a lot of guarantees. It's got, guaranteed interest rate, guaranteed premium, guaranteed face amount, guaranteed cash accumulation. The problem with that is when you say guaranteed that many times and there's an insurance company involved on the other end of it, it's going to be the most expensive of what we would term permanent insurance. So there are three types of permanent insurance: whole life, universal life, variable universal life. And the level of risk increases. Lowest level of risk would be a whole life policy because it has all those guarantees. Consequently, the most expensive. Universal life, variable interest rate. The interest rate can go up and down, but it's quoted, at the time you purchase the policy. They estimate the amount of premium you need to put in based on current interest rates. Those policies need to be tracked because they can very easily become underfunded. And then variable universal life, riskiest of all, but, from a thinking person standpoint, probably not. They're using mutual funds. They're using good old investments in stock and bond mutual funds.
So instead of an interest rate investment, it's an investment in stocks.
Stocks and bonds, mutual funds. And for folks that are comfortable with their TSP, you're investing in mutual funds. Folks that are in 401k plans, you're investing in mutual funds. And Most folks don't stop and think, geez, I'm not going to have any of that money available when I get older. They're expecting that with their contributions and growth in the markets that they'll have significantly more than they've contributed to pull back out in retirement. So they just move that same theory over to insurance policies, and they said, well, if we have folks that are already comfortable investing in mutual funds, let's let the mutual funds be the underlying investments in variable universal life. So for someone that's not risk adverse at all, of the permanent policies to choose from, that would be the best choice. So that's the lay of the land. Term insurance, I tell folks, that's you renting a car. And the nice thing about term insurance is that you don't own the car, okay? Meaning that you're going to get to use it, you're paying to use it, you're paying by the mile. If you die, there's a big payout, not to you, to a beneficiary. The nice thing about term insurance, and I'm going to stay on term for a little bit because of all the insurance out there, I like term the best. It's inexpensive. We can fill a need with it. And generally, a 20-year level term policy is going to be your best, most economical purchase. When you get out to 30-year term, the premiums do increase, and they now compare to what you would see in a universal life policy. So you kind of have to be careful. What is the actual need? What is the term that I need this for? So when I'm sitting with young parents, kids on the way, already have a few kids, we figured, okay, how long is this kid thing going to happen? And, generally, even with one child, and I've been through several unfortunate passings where young children are involved. It's about $500,000 proposition to get them out of the house and out of your hair. So a 20-year term policy.
He wasn't mentioning a buyout.
No.
They would need that kind of money set aside to provide the cash flow to
in the event
feed,
of
clothe,
death.
Educate until they're of majority. I know that's what you meant.
So term insurance is my favorite from that standpoint. And there's a feature with term insurance. It's also a feature John and I were discussing with Figley, which is there's generally a conversion privilege. And when I'm working with someone and I'm proposing term, say a 20-year term policy, I make it very clear that, listen, this is a policy that's term. You're renting it. However, should you become uninsurable for some reason, you're not able to buy a new life insurance policy, the policies that I would be proposing would have a 20-year conversion privilege, and usually that's the longest conversion privilege you'll see. But with a term policy with a 20-year conversion privilege, if I, say, become uninsurable, I come down with diabetes, I have a stroke somewhere during the period of the term insurance, I can, without having to reprove insurability, convert that to a permanent policy. Especially if the condition that I've come down with that prevents me from getting new life insurance is going to cause me to not live as long. So I say I'm 15 years into a 20-year term policy for $500,000. I have a stroke. I couldn't get new insurance if I wanted to, meaning a new life insurance policy. I can convert that up to $500,000 in face value without reproving insurability into whole life, universal life, or variable universal life. And I don't have to convert it all. I convert a part of it. So that's a handy feature. And I think that that's the one reason I really, really lean towards term is that it's inexpensive. It's inexpensive when you need it to be, which is when you're, starting your career. You've got other budget items monthly that you need to pay for. And should anything happen to you bad, meaning you become uninsurable, you can convert up to the whole face amount without having to go through that the health screening again.
This is, I think, very important for the folks listening to remember. The younger you are, if you go, you take a physical or they do some blood work, and you get that you're rated, I believe, super duper and preferred, and then regular. But a lot of us younger, we were in that high category of we're never going to have any issues. But as we age, we might have an issue, but it's not life-threatening, but we're no longer in the super preferred. We might just be in preferred. And later on, we just might be in standard. Now, as our rating decreases, our premiums increase unless, like John mentioned, there was a conversion feature that any issues that come up wouldn't impact the ability to buy insurance, but it would mm-hmm. be whole life at that point.
Well, Bob, as I sit here in front of you at 45, cruising into 46, November 3rd, you know, I've got that situation where I used to be Select Preferred. You know, then age catches up with you and sitting behind a desk too much, and suddenly the cholesterol issue creeps in, and you find out that you're no longer Select Preferred. You're just considered what's called non-tobacco. I'm a non-smoker, so I'm considered standard, as we would say. But in my case, I ran out a $100,000 quote for life insurance with a major carrier out there. But a 20-year term policy for me, if I was Select Preferred, uber healthy for $100,000, would be $204.62 a year. Now that I have my my age and my cholesterol issue going on, I'm at $329 a year. So that's a pretty big bump just for not being perfectly healthy. But just to give you an idea of why I'm not a very, very big permanent policy fan, that same policy, if I wanted it to run for me to age 100, would be $1,691 a year. But that $100,000, as I mentioned before, if I do make it to age 100, is not going to have that much spending power.
As I remember, your math was kind of like you would have a $10,000 spending power at the end of that long period of time.
Look, since our audience is primarily, maybe exclusively, federal employees and retirees, what we were discussing earlier before the show, which we should be discussing now as well, is for federal employees who have FEGLI, you can buy cheaper term insurance, a lot cheaper, on the private market. Now, a lot of federal employees have option B as well as the basic. And that means option B, you can insure up to five times your salary in single increments, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times your salary. Plus, if your basic is about your salary, a little over your salary, and your salary plus rounded the next higher 1,000 plus 2,000, so you could have up to six times your salary potentially, and which is probably a good thing to have if you're young and have a family, to have the full complement of option B and six times your salary. But unlike basic, which your premium does not increase with age, every 5 years you age, option B goes up in price. The premium goes up in price, and fairly dramatically. In fact, I think from 55 to 60, it doubles. But when I'm a federal retiree, and when I was an employee, I had five times option B. So did my wife, who was also a federal employee. And I looked at the premium jump from age 49 to 50, and I said, whoa, that's quite a bit for my option B. So what I did was I went to my insurance agent. I had some small whole life policies my grandfather had gotten for me with a major insurance company, probably A, if not AA++ rated. Very good reputation in the business, so I was comfortable going to them and saying, well, here's how much insurance I have with FEGLI. What would I pay if I dumped it and went with you? And he gave me the figures. I said, whoa, that's quite a savings. And it wasn't insignificant. I mean, it was a large savings premium for the same amount of insurance. So the only thing is I had to pass an insurance exam because they're not going to insure me or my wife if there's things where they would be at risk of you dying and they have to pay sooner than they would like to. So we both passed, and we dumped our FEGLI and substituted that and saved considerable money over the years. So I recommend all federal employees, and you don't have to wait till 50. At any time, look, even if you're young, fairly young, if you're insurable, you're in good health, and most people are, let's face it. Most people can pass a simple insurance exam. You might want to look at, I think you should look at private insurance as an alternative.
Okay. Why don't we open the phones up? 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. And call and talk to the two Johns. John spent most of the time explaining how it works. And John Elliott talked about, okay, let's talk about the feds and their Fegley options and the like. I don't know that we've covered. Have we covered in life insurance? Because we've got other types of insurance to talk about. Are we okay,
I think
John?
So.
Okay.
I think so.
John? Two Johns say yes.
Yes.
Andrew says yes. Okay. There are other types of insurance, and there's something called an umbrella policy. And
that's if you lose your umbrella?
That's if you, yes, the proverbial financial umbrella.
I need that.
So what is umbrella insurance, John? And why would we want it? Why do we need it?
Well, Bob, the best thing about these the shows is I have some advanced warning, and I can I can do my research so I can give the technical description. But I'm actually going to read this off of a major carrier site. What is umbrella insurance? And in response, umbrella insurance is a secondary coverage that protects more than one property or asset with an extra layer of liability protection. It kicks in when your underlying or primary policy doesn't provide sufficient liability protection. This umbrella policy provides an additional layer of liability protection that can be used with any of your other policies or even any policy from another insurance company, including your boat, motorcycle, all-terrain vehicle, and snowmobile. And this is something that I personally have every time I teach. I ask for a show of hands, especially in the federal world, to see how many folks have umbrella insurance. Usually out of a room of 30, I'll get 2 to 5. And what really scares me is the gross amount of advertising we see now on the TV in the Washington metro area, on the radio, billboards. And most folks kind of go, wow, he's right. They'll suddenly start to pay attention. But, in this area, we have, attorneys really, really, really pulling out all the stops to advertise. And, my first reaction to it, I really didn't pay a lot of attention, and I started paying attention as I started in my career here with NITP part-time, coming into Washington so much. It's a constant barrage, either billboards, radio, TV before you leave, of folks that do liability lawsuits. Have you been injured? Have you been bitten by the neighbor's dog? Have you slipped and fallen and it's not your fault? Call us. We're the we're the DC Hammer. We're the I don't want to get into too many attorney names, but you can suddenly start to think about these firms that are out there advertising. Hey, we have the ability to help you if you've been injured or if there's been an accident and it's not your fault. We're there to help you through the process, meaning AKA get a judgment. And when you look at a federal couple, one federal employee, or you've got a married couple, two federal, there's generally a lot of assets there that could be, called to the table should there be a liability lawsuit. The other thing, and John and I had discussed this a while back, is, the ability for your paycheck to be garnished. And where could this happen? You're driving home, you're not doing what you're supposed to do. You're sending that text message, and I've seen several commercials about this on TV recently where they're just infomercials telling folks to stop texting. But I saw one last night, and it was a younger gentleman, and apparently he was texting, I love you to I'm not sure who, but in the process, he killed three children when he hit a minivan. I can tell you that, whatever assets he had were completely wiped out. Whatever, job he's in, there's a garnishment attached to his paycheck. That's just not a situation anybody would ever want to be in. But say you're in an accident when you go home, you went through a red light, and you just suddenly T-bone someone. And when I teach this in class, I say, you know, when that, you know, MedStar chopper flies in to carry that person away, you know, I hope the first thought in your head isn't, geez, I wonder what my coverage is for something like this. You should know that you're covered. And the nice thing about an umbrella policy is generally before an insurance company, any of the major carriers will give one of those out, they are going to have you raise your policy limits on, say, your automobile and your house up to a fairly high level, at which point they will then sell you an umbrella policy, which for a married couple, the average is around $240 a year for $1 million in additional coverage.
So how much umbrella insurance should in a person have? A lot of times they're $1 million, but of course you can have more. Mm-hmm. Is $1 million enough, or is that too little?
It depends on the assets. It depends on, I guess it comes down to, it depends on how much you have to lose.
Well, say you have $1 million. Well, yeah, $1 million in assets, independent of even your house. Is $1 million umbrella too little?
I would say in that case, yes.
So would you double it, or?
In that case, I would take it up to a significant level, because when if you were to be in court, I can imagine they're already going to have all your financial data. So there's nothing hidden. It's all been depositioned and subpoenaed, and so your whole financial life is out there for the other side to see. And I think if I had $1 million in assets to, you know, that were liquid, that could be attached, things like retirement accounts, not so much. But you know, say I had some rental properties that were paid for. I had, you know, $500,000 stock bond portfolio, savings bonds. I would be very concerned that, you know, I'd want to have at least, in my estimate, double that amount in coverage. So in that case, it's a $2 million umbrella.
Okay, now, I see. But sure. Yeah, well, I want to back up to something you just said. Mm-hmm. If your IRAs and your TSP, same difference, mm-hmm. Would not be attachable. So a lot of federal employees, that's going to be the bulk of their wealth, is their TSP account. If they've, you know, been in government 25, 30 years, and were owned when certainly after retirement. So that would not be attachable in a lawsuit?
That's correct.
Oh, so, okay. Well, that changes the equation for a lot of feds.
Sure.
Because that's a big part of it.
I don't know if it would attack equity in home, but it isn't. I know we talked an awful lot about automobiles. Umbrella insurance could be somebody's visiting you and something happens, and somebody could show that it happened because you didn't take proper care of da-da-da-da. So the umbrella would cover your assets outside of an automobile, some friend in a house, and or somebody in a house.
Yeah.
And I think some cases, mm-hmm. and actually I don't sell this, but I try to bring it to people's attention. I use the ads on the air and talk about, gee, did you read about this person in the paper? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I kind of remember that. And I go, well, they wish they had umbrella insurance. I don't know that they did or didn't, but and it's not awfully expensive. Correct me if I'm wrong, the umbrella insurance premium relative to the coverage.
That's correct. For if once your policy limits, now that could be an issue for some folks from a budgeting standpoint. I was when I bring this up when I teach, you will find folks they'll come back from break or from lunch, and they'll have printed out their coverage, and or they happen to have the policy with them, and They're looking at the front page of their policy, and you know, in the Washington metro area, you know, I've seen as low as $75,000, $150,000 on limits of liability. And what that means is that in a accident, that person's covered up, you know, for a single person injured, that person's covered up to $75,000. If two people are injured, they could each get up to $75,000 for $150,000 total. And you think of just the fact that I was told the other day a friend was paying a $10,000 bill for a MedStar ride that insurance didn't cover. The person you injure, their expenses are going to multiply very quickly. So to see that low of an insurance amount. And when I questioned, you know, why is it so low? They said, well, geez, John, I really hate to say it, but I was price shopping. And this is, and I'll harp on that, this is one area in your life that you don't price shop. You start with the amount of insurance coverage you need for expected liabilities to protect your assets, and the premiums, are what they are. And when you do your price shopping, it's now comparison shopping between different companies. And there are certain insurance companies, depending on your driving history, your accident,
and that, history. That parallels what John Elliott was talking about. What do I have exposed?
What Bob mentioned it earlier, if somebody comes into your home and falls, or falls on your front stoop, or there's ice and so forth. Leads me to a question. When you bring somebody into your home to do work, whether it's housework or whatever it is, fixing your furnace, whatever it is, and they say they're bonded, somebody says, well, I am bonded, or if they're trimming your trees, I am bonded. What does exactly that mean? Anybody know?
It doesn't mean it's umbrella coverage. They're bonded such that if they didn't do the proper job, somebody else would come in and complete the job.
So it has nothing to do with them getting injured.
Like a builder will get a bond or a home improvement or a contractor. And if you were a landlord and somebody was to come in and do some rehabilitation on your building, you would want them bonded, because if the person didn't complete the job, they got to bring somebody else in.
It has nothing to do with, no. It doesn't protect you injury. That's why I asked the question, because
there might be another type of protection that they have, but the bonding isn't going to cover
that. So I should
that.
Basically fire my cleaning lady and clean my house myself.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
We're both retired.
Pat, you hear that?
Yeah. We're both retired. Oh, I'd help.
I think it's bonded and insured is what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Bonded and insured. Yeah. Because, yeah. Okay. So you were a big reason to have an umbrella policy, therefore, is you're always going to have people coming into your home to do something.
Right.
So it could be home. It could be the car. It could be you said something that really meant no. What's that called? Slander. You didn't mean to say anything, and somebody took it the wrong way.
And they sue you for that?
Yes, not me, but yes.
Okay.
Why don't we move off of that? We'll just leave that as a dangling thought process.
Well, and I like from this particular insurance carrier, when would I need umbrella insurance? And they have a little paragraph, imagine if your dog were to bite a neighbor's child, or if there's an accident on your rental property, or a fire in your condo spreads to other units, what would happen if a family member missed a stop sign and struck or killed a pedestrian? If any of these things happen to you, there's a good chance your current liability limits wouldn't be adequate to protect your assets or future earnings. And that's, I kind of go back to John's question. There's other questions we'd want to ask. Are these folks in the middle of a 40-year career with the federal service, and now they're looking at their paycheck being garnished for the next 20 years? And we did, John and I, it was a previous show, actually it was last year, we made a determination that your federal pension could not be attached.
Right.
But, if you're at or near the retirement point, it's not a concern of a judgment being levied against your federal pension. But it's, how much of the rest of your stuff that they're able to attach or take, do you really want to give up? And I think from the attorneys that I've worked with over the years, I've asked this question when I run into attorneys that do litigation. And, once someone is properly insured, meaning they at least have the umbrella policy on top of the maxed out limits on their personal policies, accidents are accidents. And what I've heard or have been told over the years is that, the court system's job is not to, impoverish you and help someone else win the lottery that was injured in an accident. So it's really, if you have a family attorney, I kind of say get all your advisors involved on this one. Take an inventory of your assets. How much, if you were to be sued, is truly at risk? And that's the way that I would approach it. But if I was in the middle of a fairly lucrative career, I'd be very concerned about having my paycheck garnished. And for a married couple, $240 a year for an extra $1 million, it's just not that expensive.
Right.
That's not even a Starbucks for a week for most folks nowadays.
So could we take a look at homeowners insurance? Now, we talked, umbrellas could cover that as well, but there's a standard policy, there's this, but it generally covers, depending if you're in a condo, it might just be the drywall from the studs out, but a house, it's probably the whole house and or the yard. But what about the stuff inside of it? Over the years, we accumulate stuff, some of which isn't worth anything, some of which is, or we might have inherited something of value, but we keep it in the house. And our homeowner's policy probably has a breakout. Okay, we have fire coverage, we've got property coverage, we've got the shed in the backyard covered, but there's always a dollar max on it. So I'm not saying that everyone should run out and have everything in their house appraised, but if you do have some things of value, it could also cover a theft of that too, couldn't it?
Yes, and it's interesting. I just reviewed my coverage, and I had it lowered. It kind of slipped by with some of the things I had going on. But, I had so much additional coverage for contents that I literally did not have that much in dollar value if, I had a yard sale and sold everything. And I ended up with a refund check back from the insurance company that was fairly significant. But you do want to make sure you have your other contents covered. And as I tell folks, if the first thing you do when your insurance policy comes in is acknowledge that it's an insurance policy and you don't even open the envelope, that's a huge problem. When you get an insurance policy, as a consumer, you need to open up that policy, look at the declarations page, read through what you're actually covered for, and then flip through those other pages of description, because folks are just grossly underestimating, in my opinion, what they're actually covered for. They think that that box of jewelry that is up there in the bedroom, if the house burns down and it melts into a big glob, somehow they're going to get the replacement cost, and there's limitations on that, and they're clearly spelled out in the policy. You can get additional coverage for jewelry. You can get additional coverage for things like guns. But if you have a lot of things, you have a priceless stamp collection. Probably your best investment's going to be a fireproof safe that'll last for 90 minutes.
What about guitars?
But guitars, Hummels. I'm not sure what your collector's poison is, but you want to make sure that you're covered for those contents in your house. And some of the things that I've seen recently, as I've done reviews for folks of their property casualty coverages, they may have coverage for up to $450,000 in content. And as I'm sitting there with both spouses, when they look back and they said, John, if we sold everything in our house, we'd be lucky to get $100,000. Well, you're paying for over four times that amount in coverage. So that leads to a conversation with the property casualty agent and a lowering of those additional insurances. And the interesting thing in the case I dealt with recently, the coverage was grossly over, but for the things that they really wouldn't want coverage for, jewelry, gun collection, they would not have recovered but maybe a tenth of the value. So he likes guns, she likes jewelry, but under the basic policy, even though it was for up to, say, $450,000, those items were only covered up to a limit of 40. So you really have to be careful of when you're getting those policies. You got to open them up. You got to read them. And again, when you're in the accident, when someone's injured, they slip and fall during your cocktail party. That's not when you want to find out what your insurance coverage is.
And things change. I'm a product of the 50s, I guess. So I've got all these old 45s and albums, and for the longest time I couldn't give them away. Now all of a sudden vinyl's back in vogue, and I ought to have it appraised. I didn't miss a chance to buy a 45 for like 10 cents. I'm really geezing here, but there are a bunch of them, and albums as well, and pinball machine or two. And
well, for the cost of a good safe, it's worth every penny.
All righty. Let's just go through this again. I think this is a good thing. I'll refer to when I do the seminars, because I don't do insurance, but I said, you know, you might want to listen to this because we covered life insurance. I really like the way you dug into each type and defined it, because it is confusing, mm-hmm. For somebody that doesn't deal with it. And how would you cover the risks? What is an umbrella policy? We talked about that. Mm-hmm. And why would one want one? And we finished up with homeowners insurance. And why would we want to cover different things with regard to the homeowners insurance? So this was good. Andrew, what do we got? 2 minutes? Andrew says 2 minutes. So final analysis, John Jay?
The best thing I could give someone for a takeaway for today is open your insurance policies. Spend the minimal amount of time it's going to take for you to get versed in what you're covered for. Again, I think an accident is the wrong time to find out, or a fire is the wrong time to find out what you're covered for. And those questions, if you were in my class and I ask you, what are you covered for? There are a handful of folks that have their hand up and they can tell me exactly what they're covered for. And I think that that's where everyone should be.
One question I didn't ask you, how does one contact you?
You can reach me at 301-704-0544. That's 301-704-0544. Or via email, Trader, T-R-A-D-E-R, J-O-H-N, my last initial there, J, at gmail.com.
Okay. John E.?
Well, compare Fegley to private, as I did, and you can save a lot of money. And the website is opm.gov, and then click on Fegley or life insurance, and it'll open up the whole Fegley cost, and then you can do some comparison shopping. Good
All
idea.
Right. Thank you, guys. I don't have anything to add to that, but please listen next week. We'll be on. Oh, my goodness. Who's on next week? If I only had a memory. Anyway, we'll talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.